Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. So my name is David Kajampakeni, and I acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Kelly Morgan and Dr. Said Hamido. The other two are located at the University of Florida, Southwest Florida Research and Education Center. I'm located at the Citrus Research and Education Center. So we had some work that we did in Southwest Florida and then in Central Florida regarding water use measurements and also monitoring water use using several sensors, and I'll be presenting on that work. So I kind of talk about the challenges we have in the state regarding citrus greening, a disease that's wiping out most of the citrus crops. I've lost close to 400,000 acres in the state. I'll just kind of give you an overview, because whatever we are doing, water conservation or nutrient management, is related to trying to address that challenge. And then I'll kind of offer you some highlights of irrigation studies we did to look at conserving water and look at different irrigation schedules, both in the field and in the greenhouse scenarios. And then I kind of just offer you a summary of what we found. So what you have, for some of you who are not from Florida, I would like to say that citrus accounts for about $10 billion of economic value in the state. It's a big, big contribution. Right now we are threatened. It's like we are with the loss of the conservation area. The yields have declined by about 67%. Very, very drastic declines. And production costs also have gone up by about $2,100. Growers were at first paying about $800, but now it's way up because they have to contract against the disease and try to manage water, and they're just putting on water there to try to help trees cope up with root loss and declining foliage and also declining performance. So some of the ways that we are trying to address this, for example, if a grower doesn't have any issues with the disease, they've just planted, just a new planting, we encourage frequent irrigation, and others also are trying to move from growing under normal scenarios in the field to growing what we call citrus under cover production system, CAPS, where they can keep out the disease-causing agents and still be able to get some fresh fruit. Another way also we are trying to explore is use of regulated deficit irrigation, because what you have realized in some of the studies that we have done is that trees that are infected with the disease use close to about 75% of the normal irrigation water requirement that the citrus tree would require. So we are trying to see if we can explore that and help growers reduce cost of pumping. Another one that we are trying to explore is the use of partial root zone drying, whereby growers would irrigate parts of the root zone and then reduce water inputs. And more importantly, we are encouraging them to control against the disease-causing agent called the agent psyllid. Now, for example, if a grove is about 2-3 years old or 5 years old, and then they don't have, you know, the trees are already infected, we encourage curative management, whereby the growers would still use their irrigation to manage against the pests, try to optimize pH. Those of you who may not be familiar with the water sources we have in Florida, we have challenges with the water source because of the limestone underground, and that affects the pH of the irrigation water. So growers have to all the time try to acidify the irrigation water to make sure that they put the water that's optimal for nutrient availability and uptake. And then also we are trying to move from granular fertilization towards fertigation. So the fertilizer practices for over 4 years were normally using fertilizer sources that were kind of granular, and then uptake is limited. And with the disease, we realized, or with, you know, current practices, we have realized with our sandy soils, we need to move towards fertigation practices to make sure we optimize nutrient uptake. And then the other way is, for example, if you have a grove that's odd, say over 15 years old, and it's already nearly dying, we still encourage the growers to manage to optimize the irrigation and manage pH, and also try to manage the fertigation practices. So we did a couple of studies. In the irrigation studies that we did, there were three sites that we did for about 2 years, and we looked at their irrigation versus irrigating every 2 days and versus irrigating as an intermediate of the two, like every 1.5 days. And then we also tried to look at modified irrigation practices that we call advanced citrus production systems, whereby you compared what growers are using as a standard to what we are currently trying to encourage them to do, like use drip irrigation or use micro sprinkler that irrigates or wets just a portion of the rhizome as a concept of partial rhizome drying. And then we also conducted some greenhouse studies to look at a set of trees that had the disease and then a set of trees that didn't have the disease, using automated systems like from Campbell Scientific and weighing glycimeters, and I'll show the results in a moment. So in the green, in the field studies where we compared dairy irrigation schedule versus intermediate irrigation schedule, or versus the irrigating every 2 days, the one when I say IFAS, bear with me, it means Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. That was kind of the Universal Food Recommendation. So when I say IFAS, know that it's irrigating every 2 days. What we found, I don't know if you can see, but what we found was that the top one in each case was the dairy irrigation, and then somehow the intermediate was closer to the irrigating every 2 days. We just had a weird curve here when we tried to record the water use using Dynamax and Safflow sensors. That one was kind of way off, but the other ones showed that dairy irrigation was better in triggering water use among the trees. We also tried to look at water storage in the rhizome. What we found was that the trees had effectively declining water contents from the top layer to the bottom layer, and what we expected was that in the top 30 centimeters, there's an active root zone. So most of the roots of citrus are located in that zone, and there's active uptake. And since they're sandy soils with more than 97% sand, most of the water ended up also draining beyond 30 centimeters. So that's why you see increasing water contents or available water beyond at around 30 to 45 centimeters. And this is also just a similar thing, but one thing that I want you to pay attention to is that we find very good correlation between available water and then the subflow measurements we did. So subflow measurements are the tools that we try to measure the subflow in the leaf or in the trunk of the tree. And then we correlated that with the soil moisture content, and we found very good correlation. And what we found was that if growers put water between 9 and 2 p.m., that coincided with the peak water use of the tree, and that would limit lots of water losses in the tree. And we tried to look at water use per kernel per volume, and we tried to look at water use per unit leaf area. What we found was that when we compared conventional grow practices versus drip irrigation and modified restricted micro sprinkler, what we found was that on two soil types that we tried to do the study, we didn't find any differences, and that was encouraging to us, because with drip irrigation and with the other micro sprinkler practice that was modified, the growers were irrigating just a portion of the root zone, and that was good news, because that way growers would save water and reduce water inputs in the citrus groves. And when we tried to look at differences between what growers use, CMP, like grower practice, and then modified micro sprinkler, which was MOHS, and then drip practices, DOHSS, what we found was that we stayed close to or slightly above field capacity. So where you see the line that I'm kind of showing there, that was a point of field capacity right there. And we realized that we were close, and which was showing us that we are doing a good job in trying to manage the water in the sandy soils. When we tried to look at our greenhouse studies, we compared two citrus varieties, the major commercial varieties. So if you're in Florida and you've had a good time having some juice around here, know that that juice comes from one of these two. Very delicious, very good. Okay, so it's grinding now, but you'll have a good time. So it's the Valencias are the sweetest, the Hamlins are the ones that are kind of chaotic, but they're equally good. So what we found, as you can see on the right, you see that for the Hamlin oranges, we had between 23 and 35% greater ETC compared to, for the trees with HLB, they had better water ATC than the ones that had the disease HLB. Same thing with also the Valencia, we found between 22 and about 30% better water use. between the valence of that were healthy compared to those that had the disease. This greenhouse study is the one that has kind of given us, you know, confidence to go further now and do some field work and validate this under field conditions, because there we could maintain the disease-free environment in the greenhouse. And then we also tried to look at the coefficients of those trees. What we found was that still there were between 20 to 35% better cases or greater cases for the trees without the disease compared to those that have the disease. So we have realized that, yes, HOB affects water use. Why? Because of the limitation in the root density rate, the limitation in the foliage, even if you stay in the greenhouse. And then we are planning to go ahead and do some field studies to validate this in the field, because growers won't believe our greenhouse standards yet. We'll publish the work, but they can't believe it yet. Want to go to the field, validate that, and then make sure come up with extension blades that kind of address their needs. So in summary, what we have concluded is that if growers use daily or frequent irrigation, they will be able to achieve better soil moisture distribution and better water use in the trees. And we have also concluded that trees that are affected by HOB will use between 22 and 35% less water than non-affected trees. And also, we concluded that if you use modified, you know, advanced citrus production practices, use drip irrigation, use modified macro-sprinkler irrigation, you come up with better or vigorous tree growth and also better water use. To this end, I would like to acknowledge some of my colleagues that supported me, Dr. Schumann, and also growers in Southwest Florida and also in Central Florida, and our sponsors. And at this point, I'm done. I don't know if I have time for any questions.
Yes, you do have some time for some questions. The question,
simple one.
Okay.
Did you consider all the effects of microorganisms in the soil and the plant in these studies? Sounds only water, soil, plant, and not microbes.
Oh yeah, a good question. Actually, we didn't factor that in. We didn't have a soil microbiologist on board. At this point, we got a study underway with the microbiologist looking at the microbial communities, and that would affect maybe, you know, microbial presence and all those, water use and even nutrient availability. So now we have factored in, but here it was missing. Thanks for the observation. Oh, all right.
Are those data on water use normalized leaf area differences between the affected and non-affected trees? Are there no differences in leaf area between the trees?
What I can say is that we did take leaf area measurements for both the diseased trees and the healthy trees. And how we normalized was that we simply looked at the water use of each of the trees and then divided or normalized out its leaf area.
Okay.
Yeah, but we had declines in leaf area index and leaf area for the diseased trees compared to the healthy trees.
Okay, but those are normalized.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks. Okay.
Normally, for how long
under normal circumstances, they would keep the tree for even close to over 40 years. So you'd have a son, you know, be born, inherit your growth, and reap from it. But at this point, it's kind of different. So it
normally, they have a peak. Maybe you say 40 years.
Right.
And after 20 years, the growth would, you know, start seeing decline in production.
Yeah, but what I was going to actually add is that now it's different. When you talk of a grove that will sit there for 10 years, that's like a nightmare at this point. Trees are just dying within 7 years or 8 years of planting because of the disease. So it's kind of different now. So the 40-year timeline was the good olden days, 60s, 70s, 80s, and the early 2000s. Now it's kind of different.
So you would expect after, you know, doing more research to recommend growers that you can, you know, leave your fruit tree for this number of years, and after that get rid of it.
Oh yeah, what is happening now, that's why at the beginning of the slides I showed the three scenarios, the preventive scenario, the curative scenario, and then the remediative scenario, whereby you can, you don't have the disease, you are controlling, you are skipping out the disease-causing agents, you can have that thing for forever. You have that unit surviving. But if you're in the field and then you are prone to the disease-causing agents, I wouldn't say grow would be able to keep those trees for 20 years or so. Actually, as a matter of fact, what we are, our breeders are recommending at this point that they're coming up with some disease-tolerant varieties, and the Citrus Mutual for Florida is encouraging those growers to replant whatever they have, whatever is failing now, and put the disease-tolerant varieties and see if that can take them somewhere and then, you know, ensure longevity. Yeah. Thank you so much.